Bright Lights Pathfinders. We are all a bright light searching for the Pathfinder's way. Hello, I'm Kathy Cook, and I'm your host on Thursday evenings at 6 o'clock Pacific Time. That's 9 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. So listen up and tune in to Station 1 on BBSRadio.com. It's a positive power production. Unique perfection evolves. Exquisite feelings awaken. Producing passion style.
Hello, we're on the air. This is Bright Lights Pathfinder Show, and I'm Kathy Cook. Tonight we have with us Betsy Klein and her jewelry making, how she makes her jewelry, what transpires it, what Betsy's all about, and where she got her gift from. She went into venturing into many different realms, painting, photography, ceramics, graphic furniture, design, before she entered the world of jewelry. She grew up traveling all over the world with her film producer father. There's just so much to say about Betsy that I'm going to go in and bring her on the air. And hello, Betsy. How are you?
Hi, it's fine tonight. How about yourself?
I'm doing great. Thanks for asking. Great to have you on the show.
I am very honored to be on the show. Thank you.
Oh, gosh. Tell me a little bit about how did you get started in exactly in jewelry making? I mean,
actually from a very young age.
Art.
Pardon?
I said, these are pieces of art.
Well, it's an evolution. It's an evolutionary process as far as how I actually got into it. My uncle actually started taking me to gem shows when I was young.
Uh-huh.
And through my travels, I got to actually witness a lot of wonderful jewelry making in Africa and throughout the world. So it intrigued me, you know, the colors, the textures, and how everything translated into that medium always intrigued me. The pièce de résistance is when my parents took me to H. Stern in Brazil, and it was downhill from there because I saw some of the most beautiful gems in the world and some of the exotic gems, and they were my true inspiration. I started, as you said earlier, started in ceramics and furniture design. And it was actually when I couldn't find anything that I liked, I started making jewelry for myself. And and that was about 15, 20 years ago. And it just kind of took a life of its own.
It sure has. As I tell you, you have the most beautiful jewelry. When I first saw it, I wanted to pick it right off the page.
Well, and I don't see the jewelry as jewelry sometimes. I think of it as wearable art.
I see it as art.
Right. I do call it that. I call it wearable art because in trying to enhance not just the stone and honor that, but also the person wearing it. It takes on their personality as well.
So when you're making a piece and you got an order
mm-hmm.
for a certain client,
like a custom,
how do you
piece
go about making that piece fit their personality?
Well, that's a process too. I have a long history in sales as well. And being a good salesperson is first and foremost being a good listener. And when you listen, you learn. So when you get to be a good judge of people and to hear things that are not being said. So part of that process is to watch and learn about that person. Another tangible thing that I do is sometimes look at their wardrobe. Now, the wardrobe is not just about the color, but about their style and what they feel comfortable with and what their lifestyle is. So understanding that and where their, you know, clothes are represent or show what type of person you are. They do represent you. So leaning on that and taking it a step up is, I really enjoy doing custom pieces because of that.
Yeah.
Because
it's almost like reading a person's language, body language.
Well, yes, it is. It is. I mean, a good hairdresser, I hate to use that analogy, but a good hairdresser is the same way. You know, you can tell the hairdresser, oh, my hair cut short. But if they really understand your personality and your nature and really read that and listen between the words that you say, it's a winning combination. It's magic.
I know exactly what you mean by that. It's an art with that as well. One time when we were talking, I'm going to just give a little history behind. I've known Betsy since, what, eighth grade?
A long time.
I don't even know. It's a long, long,
long
time.
Long, too many years.
Yeah. And then we called up again just recently, and you said to me one night, you said art is not something that can be brought into words. It's an expression that is beyond words.
It's a feeling. You have to, when people look at my work, Kathy, you know, they said, well, I like all of it. I said, well, unless something speaks to you, art is the most personal form of expression. And unless you connect, you know, it's like music. You know, you have to connect to that music. And when it does, it is, you know, as I said before, it's magic. So it's fun to see. I mean, it warms an element in my heart when you take a piece of art or a piece of my work and it speaks to someone and they connect to it. And unless they have that connection, I don't want them to have the piece. I know that sounds a little strange, but
yeah.
But when it does happen, it is a part of them. And just like looking at a painting or listening to music, it's the same. It's the same.
Okay. Hypothetically, let's just take, I'm coming to get an order from you, and I don't know what I want. Don't know what I want in it. Don't know what gemstones or materials. And you just start transpiring in your head right then, or do you?
Oh, no. That's a very good question. Again, some of my background comes into play. I've been in technology for 20 years, and I do a preliminary analysis if anybody's in a technology background. And that is really understanding, you know, who that person is, you know, mapping it out and spinning to understand. I'd ask you, what do you love to do? What excites you? What brings you joy in your life? And some person may say, you know, the water, you know, the ocean or the mountains or what activity. I start asking the questions that elicit the feelings of joy, what elicits that personal feeling of joy within them. And coupled with the other elements that I was talking about previously, you know, all of a sudden those colors begin to form. That picture becomes apparent in my mind. And as it does, I'll give you a good case in point. A recent customized piece, she said, I want everything delicate. And I want everything green. Well, there's green and there's green and there's green and there's green. So what she was talking about, I said, pull all your clothes out. Let me see all your spring clothes and your wardrobe. And actually the unifying element to all her clothes was a lavender color.
Really?
Was a pink side of lavender. I said, you realize you have one color through this whole realm. And she said, no. I said, the pink lavender. I don't like pink. No. This is lavender. So let's start there. You like green. What greens go with? We ended up with pink and green amethyst. And she wanted gold. The irony is that I made a couple of necklaces that were very, very, very delicate. And then I decided to go bolder. And I gave her options. She ended up taking the bold one, which I cracked up about. So even though she was telling me one thing, I was I said, you know, I think she wants something a little edgier. Don't ask me why. Well, my intuition was right. What she told me and what she ended up taking was what I thought she was going to take. And that's happened more than a few times.
Wow.
Which is interesting.
I want you to give out your webpage so that people can go and see.
It's a very complicated website. It's www.BetsyKlein.com. And I'm being facetious on that. Somebody asked me just tonight, says, how did you get that name? I said, I bought the domain name 10 years ago. And I've had it ever since, just with no anticipation of having a website of my own. I just bought the domain name and it, you know, kismet.
Well, you are in many different magazines, and you have shows with your art.
Right. I'm very honored to be a part of the La Jolla Arts Festival in La Jolla, California, in June 20th and 21st. I'm going to be at Bloomingdale's in Bethesda, Maryland, in August. That is not, I'm not sure exactly of the date. They haven't confirmed, you know, which time in August, but they're solidifying that right now.
Mm-hmm.
I have a show going on right now at Red Sky Gallery in Charlotte, North Carolina. And then I'm in a magazine, the current issue of Boho, which is an international green fashion magazine. They did a wonderful, wonderful article. I was very happy with what they did. And then I'm also in the May issue of More magazine. Believe it or not, a Jell-O ad. A stylist had called me, and they used two of my pieces in the ad with some other styles that go along with a new kind of Jell-O that just came out with. So that was pretty exciting.
That is something else. I can't get enough of looking at your pieces and going, well, I'm excited, but I want to get my mother in. You know.
But it's a continuing challenge, and I like the challenge.
How did you come about knowing how to price a piece?
That's a very good question.
Yeah,
that's a very good question.
Make my art. It's like, how do I put a price on this?
Well, and initially you have to look at, there's a lot of different ways of doing it. And usually with jewelry or with traditional fine jewelry, it's, I'm trying to think of a term where you double it. So if you have $100 into it, keystone, that's the term. You keystone it and charge $200. Well, when it starts evolving into, like, the green piece that you love so much, that's the first picture, actually, that comes up in a flash presentation on my website. That took literally 80 hours to produce. That took a month. And, you know, it's very difficult to say, okay, did I make $2 an hour? Did I make $5 an hour?
Exactly.
You know, as an artist, you never make... Sometimes it's just what's marketable. You know, there's some pieces that I make more money on than others. That green piece, I'm never going to make the money that I put the time into. You know, a month's worth of work, is that worth the money?
From a couple of, several hundred to several thousand.
Correct. And usually the thousands are into the precious and semi-precious. I use, I'm working with sapphires now. I'm working with emeralds. I'm working with rubies. And that's fun. I mean, I feel like a little girl going, ooh, goody, I get to work with the good.
Oh, man.
You know?
Do you have to drill them?
Pardon?
To drill them to sew them in?
That's another good question. That is an art in and by itself, as far as people who do the drilling, because the different stones have different hardness factors. So if you do not know what you're doing, or if you are a novice, it can be a very expensive error. So I leave it to the experts. I'm lucky enough to have an incredible person I work with who facets and works with the stones. And if I say I need an 8 millimeter, you know, machine cut faceted Wandel shape sapphire, I can get it from them. So I am very blessed to have a wonderful, wonderful contact. I used to, you know, buy things, and I still do occasionally when I find something. My pearl vendor out of New York is direct to Hong Kong, so she knows that when I'm looking for a particular color, like I love cobalt blue. She found a pearl that was like a raku. I don't know whether you're familiar with raku and ceramics, but it had a raku finish.
Yes, that's where you burn it with paper or whatever.
Well, correct, exactly.
Stuff,
and I found one that mimicked that. I said, I want every strand you have. Found another pearl that was like copper, mimicked square copper. I said, I want every one you have because I see things beyond. Those were inspiring to me. They were out of the norm. They were out of the. So I'm getting a little deviated from the question that you were asking.
I'm just like. Absorbing every word.
Well, I get very excited and passionate about the pieces because they speak to me. So that's one of my inspirations.
You let them go after you finish those babies.
Well, and that's why I love actually, you know, being in the shows or being in trunk shows because I get to witness the people getting excited about it and telling them the story that's behind the pieces. So it's kind of fun in that respect. It really is.
You just
kind of like an actor who still does Broadway, not
mm-hmm.
because of the money, but because they get to get the immediate gratification of their art,
hey,
of people responding to their art.
That's such a gift you have.
Thank you so much.
Ever since I've been on radio, CBS Radio, hello everyone out there, you listening audience at CBSRadio.com, I have always said, what's your niche? What's your calling? What is it that you feel that you're here for? You know, Betsy, you have found such a great, wonderful way to express not only yourself but others and touch others' lives as well.
Thank you. That's very sweet. And it's interesting you're asking me my niche. I really do have a target market, although I do have a lot of people out of this target market who do purchase from me.
Uh-huh.
Most of my target is the 40-plus woman.
Right.
And there is this, you know, as much as I am, you know, concentrating on the passion and the artistry of what I work with and the craftsmanship, there are some elements that make it more marketable to that 40-plus niche, i.e., number one, it has to be bold or a statement piece, but it has to be lightweight. You know, women in 40-plus don't want anything that heavy.
That big scale that you have on it.
Pardon?
That piece of art that you have, the big tortoiseshell on there.
Oh, it's the abalone shell.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a whole other story in itself. But the other thing is an easy clasp. It has to be easy to take on and off.
Okay.
And it sounds silly. And now I've gotten into some of the jewelry that you can use not only as a necklace, but you can wear it long, you can wear it short, you can wind it up and wear it as a bracelet, you can wear it as a belt. So you can have fun. There's an element of fun in some of the newer pieces.
Didn't you just finish a piece like that?
Oh, yeah. I'm having a lot of fun with those. In fact, one of those was a part of, that was in Moore Magazine.
Is in Moore Magazine?
There's two pieces that are in Moore Magazine. One was actually a necklace, the two necklaces, and one went down to the middle of my shin, and the other one went to mid-thigh. And you just wind them. And it can be worn as a choker. It can be worn very long flapper style. It can be worn as bracelets individually together. So I've been putting a lot of groupings together and working with that.
Uh-huh.
But you were talking about the abalone shell. I said I love to tell this story because I found this giant abalone shell in Charleston, South Carolina.
Tell them how to find it on your page.
It's under products. It comes up as part of the flash, but it's part of the bold jewelry.
Okay.
And I found this abalone shell and just fell in love with the colors and the statement. And someone said, what are you going to do with that shell? You're going to put it on your shelf? I said, no, I'm going to make a necklace. You're going to do what?
Because it's
like the size of my hand. Okay, I have a small hand, but it's the size of my hand. And, in fact, when my mother first saw this piece, she goes, who would wear something like that? I said, well, obviously not you.
I know.
It is definitely a statement piece. But I had fun because I took the colors from the shell, and I see the translation into Iolite, Apatite, Aquamarine, you know, all the different colors that I can pull from it and start in fluorite and, you know, light amethyst and, you know, start. That shell was the inspiration for the necklace. So that was a lot of fun to do. A lot of fun.
In Charleston, right?
I'm sorry?
Found the shell in Charleston.
I found the shell in Charleston, but I've actually done a lot of water pieces,
uh-huh.
And it's interesting because they said, well, I want a water piece. Okay, do you want a water piece from the water in South Carolina? Do you want a water piece from the Caribbean? Do you want a water piece from West Palm Beach? You know, all the water is...
Are you a creek bed or a personality.
Yeah, you don't want one from a creek bed. No. But the color.
I don't know. I found a lot of stones in, I don't know if you've ever heard it, Hidden Knight.
Oh, yeah.
That's where
Midnight, North Carolina. Sure.
That's when we got started talking on Facebook. Was I said, I love, I collect stones. And you said, well, I make jewelry and art out of stone. And
well,
that.
And we're blessed to be in North Carolina, which is the heart of so many wonderful stones.
Oh, gosh. I mean, in
the world, people don't realize, you know, some of the biggest emerald mines have been in North Carolina.
The biggest emeralds in Midnight.
Oh, that's right. That's right. I forgot about that. You're exactly right. But it's, you know, it's kind of fun to discover those things, too. And not all stones lend themselves well, I think, to jewelry. Like, you know, people are very into, you know, the alternative feeling and meaning of stones, you know, through crystals.
Exactly.
And stones, you know. Mm-hmm. Well, one of the most healing of stones, is, to me, is the ugliest one, and that's bloodstone.
It's just
ugly.
This one's ugly?
Pardon?
The bloodstone?
Bloodstone.
Bloodstone, yeah. Boy, is it ever.
You know, it just, I said, someone, can you make something with bloodstone?
Oh, man, I've got a piece right here, a piece of bloodstone.
Yeah, no.
Polishing it and everything, it's still, but it works. I mean, it's good energy.
Oh, it's great energy, but again, that's not.
You know, a belt buckle center for bloodstone would be good for a cowboy or something like that.
That would be interesting, and I've seen a lot in, you know, there's some wonderful agates and jaspers out there that are absolutely inspiring. But it's interesting as far as a marketing standpoint. You were talking about pricing and things like that. I happen to love a stone called rhodochrosite. There's rhodonite and rhodochrosite. Both are pink. One has a black matrix. One has a pink matrix. I mean, a white matrix.
Okay.
And the veining is what they call the matrix. Well, rhodochrosite, and the less white, the better the quality. There's this beautiful, beautiful pink. Well, I've made a couple things in rhodochrosite, and they just don't sell because people don't understand the value of the stone.
Oh.
They don't. It's not marketable to me. And here I love it, but and for some reason, pink doesn't sell for me. I don't know why. Other than, and so I usually just donate it to
donate it my way, girl. Donate it my way. I wanted to ask you, I'm still this big, Evelyn. The intricate detail, you've got that thing hooked to that big shell.
Oh, the way it's hooked. That was actually done by a friend of mine who is an incredible, incredible artist named Eleanor Worth, and she shows with me at Red Sky Gallery. In fact, we just had an opening of a new show together. Our show was together at Red Sky that started last Friday night, and she works, she is a professional weaver by trade.
Oh.
But we swap out work together. Like, I'll do some wire wrapping for her, and she actually made the bale. That's what it's called, the thing that attaches that shell to the teeth. We picked out the colors of some Japanese delicas, which is like the finest seed beads. They're all perfectly cut and perfectly even. So that's the creme de la creme of the seed bead. And we put the colors together because I knew if we had silver, it would overpower the piece. It needed to be softer, quieter, and work in harmony with the stone. So I decided on this, and she was the one who actually implemented it, which was great. You know, she did a great job on that.
So how I got to the stone, everyone, listening to the audience, is I went to www.BetsyKlein.com. I went to the Watt Produce, clicked on that, and went to Bold. And that's where that gorgeous piece of
And with the other, I've done a little bit of silver work. I'm trying to get better. I'm still pretty much
My daughter-in-law is great at the silver work. She was here this weekend, and I was telling her you were coming on the show Thursday. she would love to get up with you when she's in Charlotte longer.
Well, I'm working on the silver. I've got a long way to go, and unfortunately, I started in welding in high school. So once you've gone from welding to working with silver, it's a vast difference, and I'm still learning to be friends with the fire.
Let me ask you, I did stained glass in school, and the way we drifted, messed with it to solder it down,
mm-hmm.
Is that more or less like what you do with the silver?
No. There's different ways of soldering, and I don't have, where I live, I don't have the accessibility to the proper ventilation that you need for an acetylene torch. So I either go over to a friend's house to use that, or I just use a pretty good-sized butane torch. But as far as soldering, I don't use a soldering tool. There's different options. You can use wire. You can use little sheet solder, or I personally use paste solder because it has the flux built in. So when I'm doing little pieces, I use that.
Good gosh, woman.
Pardon?
That's a good gosh. I didn't know all this went into it, You just don't know. But that's why I'm so happy to have you on the show. When you are making the actual piece, the necklace pieces,
mm-hmm.
There's so many different ways that you have made them drop, like waterfalls or droplets of a tear or just combusting out into a brilliance of radiance that looks like it's just going to reach out of a person and they're just glowing off of it in your pictures. When you're making these, I know that I'm looking at one and there must be 20 strands hooked into this one piece.
Is that the citrine?
With teeny-weeny pieces all hooked into it.
The citrine? I'm guessing it's the citrine. I have 18 strands of citrine. And I vowed never to do that again. That was technically the biggest bear I have ever worked with in my entire life. And that's the hardest part, believe it or not, is finishing it. But also, it's interesting. People think everything is random in my pieces, and it's quite the opposite. Everything has a pattern.
And everything's so symmetrical.
Well, it is.
But it's not.
There's a lot of detail.
Moves. You know what I'm saying? It moves with you.
Right. And I think of it as sculpture.
Mm-hmm.
And in working with painting and sculpture, I work with variants like the green piece that we were talking about, the Garden of Green and Gold. It's not just green. There's three main stones in there, the Suvenite, Peridot, and Grosler Garnet. And all three have different hues and textures of green that are very similar, but enough to create that variance of depth, coupled with some Swarovski crystal in different
tones.
That's
the one I wanted to pluck off the page.
Right, and different, the Japanese delicates, I work with different textures, some matte, mostly matte, and some shiny and in different colors to play off the color and light. And it's when you couple it together, in those patterns. Some work, if somebody asked me one time, how long does it take you to make a necklace? I said, it really just depends because they don't realize how much I take apart or how long it takes to get to that pattern that makes it work. And it's just a gut feeling that says, it's a silly thing to say, but when I smile and looking at it, I know it works. I grin, I go, yeah, got it.
Oh, gosh. Oh, man. I wish you would put up a video one day. And just let people see how you make it.
Well, and again, it's a process. There's one of the most recent or interesting inspirations I had. I was looking through the September issue of Vogue magazine, and I came across this Versace ad. And I saw the fabric and the combination of color in that particular fabric and the Versace dress. And I just fell absolutely in love with it. And I said, I'm going to mimic this. This is great. I think fabric designers have the most incredible sense of color combination than of any other art medium. And I took that fabric and made a wonderful, wonderful necklace out of it, a combination of three strands.
Name it.
So it was a smoky citrine, black spinel, brass, some cranberry pearls, and it was just an interesting combination, and a few other things thrown in there. But, you know, I love to find different inspirations and trigger them. I remember talking to a friend of mine, and I was flying over flying into West Palm Beach, and I was looking out the window, and I was so intrigued by the colors of the water changing as they went into the different inlets and how they changed colors. And I'm thinking, okay, that's Iolite, that's Apatite, that's Aquamarine, that's so on.
Oh, my gosh.
And I'm sitting there translating, and when I was telling a friend of mine about this, she goes, "You're going to make a necklace out of this, aren't you?" I'm like, yeah. And sure enough, I called it Mar-a-Lago, and it sold pretty fast.
And it just made a memory in your mind? And then
The one thing I do have, I don't want to, it's going to sound like bragging, but, you know.
Have a photographic memory.
Well, with color.
Mm-hmm.
With color. You know, like in the music, someone would call that, what is it, perfect pitch?
Uh-huh.
You know, when someone has, you know, perfect pitch in music. I have almost perfect pitch in color. I can look at a color and say, and then go, a week goes by and say, and point out on a Pantone color chart exactly what color I just saw a week ago.
Oh, man.
To the exact hue.
The names as well fit each key. So
well, it's kind of a fun trait to have.
I'm looking at your Jardin de la Borette.
Right, it's the Garden of Green and Gold. That's the green. That's the one that took 80 hours.
80 hours, and it's 11 strands.
But that was the inspiration, actually, was the City of Charlotte.
Yeah.
That was.
Tell the listening audience how to say the special word that starts with an S, crystal.
Swarovski. And the way to say it, excuse me, is like you're swearing, but in past tense, swore, on and off, and you're skiing, S-K-I, swore, off, ski, Swarovski.
Off.
Like off. I swear off skiing. I didn't swear off skiing, I swore off skiing, swore off ski. So if you write it down, sometimes if people write it down, but it's interesting to hear how many different pronunciations, and I have a Latvian friend who has Swarovski, we're not even going. We're not even going how she pronounces it. But the Swarovski people were actually Czech. They're from the Czech Republic, but they talked about it being Austrian crystals. That's where the factory was, which is why they call it Austrian. But it's actually a Czech family who started it, who owns it. But they came out with some new satin finishes that mimic, I think, or more closely corresponds with natural stones. So I enjoy putting those together, and that gives it a little extra bling. And some of the pearls, if you get good quality fresh
pearls. Love that word, bling.
Well, yeah, and they've come out with all these wonderful shapes, these quiche shapes, which is kind of irregular and unfortunately can get very pricey. But it adds so much interest and so much movement to the piece. And that I do love, you know, you brought out the point about that things move. I do like something that mimics a movement or a flow or energy to a piece along with the color and with light, such as with glass pieces do.
Mm-hmm. Well, they definitely move, and I'll tell you what, they can make you feel really sassy or real elegant, sophisticated, debonair. You were telling me about your mother's pieces that you had given her and how you wanted her to wear some of your newer pieces.
She won't do it.
These are mine. Because you know what? I was thinking about that after we hung up the phone today. That's her personality. That's her feel.
Well, she just loves the pieces that I've made years ago. And, you know, as I said for you earlier, excuse me, that I'm trying to get her to wear newer pieces. I go, Mom, you know, you're representing my work. I would like you to wear something that's newer. No, but I like these. You can't take them away from me. I like them. I said, okay.
Oh.
So,
the grandmother of your grandbabies and your brother's mother-in-law, I believe, had on a piece that I saw a picture of, blue, gorgeous blue. What stone was that?
Which one was that? I'm sorry?
I was looking at some pictures that you let me look at.
Oh, that was my mother.
Oh, it was
your
mother?
She had some blue topaz on.
It radiated off of her.
Oh, yeah. She loves her lapis and loves her blue topazes and black and golds. And so, in fact, my greatest story about my mother was I had made a piece for myself with some tourmalated quartz and black spinel and black garnet. And she said, can I borrow that for the thing I have to go to? I said, sure. And then she finally gave me this beautiful amethyst ring that I've been wanting and lusting after for probably 20 years. I go, Mom, it's about time you gave me that ring. She goes, oh, yeah, and by that way, you know that necklace you let me borrow? I said, yes, it's mine now.
I said, okay,
I guess it's a trade then.
Speaking of mothers, my mother said hello to you and that she misses you and that can't wait to see you again.
She's a good lady.
I wanted to ask another question before we get put out the call-in number.
Sure.
On if you have a time limit, do you tell a person I'll have it ready in 4 weeks, 6 weeks? Do you give them a time frame, or do they give you a time frame? And if so, does that put any pressure on you or take the joy out of what you're doing?
I usually haven't had a problem with that.
Uh-huh.
Because, again, just like any project, if you ask the right question, and it depends on the situation, so it
uh-huh.
depends on how involved they want it.
Right.
And it's just like anything else. You know, as I said before, I came from a technology background and software development. You know, it depends on the project. If
right.
you do the right analysis and understand, you know, the right quantitative questions, then you know how long it's going to take. And I always build another week or two in there just
right.
to make sure. And it challenges
me. You don't have to change a piece from a client, you know, a little bit here or there.
To me, I find it easier. Custom pieces are easier for me than pulling up something brand new out of my head.
Right.
Because there's a lot to work with.
Uh-huh.
My father, as you said before, was a filmmaker, and he produced films for corporations. Well, it was about something. He had to create something and make it interesting. It's a lot more difficult, I think, for these filmmakers to create something out of nowhere. You know, that to me is a lot more challenging. You know, both are a challenge, but in different ways.
And your son, do you mind bring up your son? And
oh, I love to bring up my son.
He's a photography. He is such.
No, he's a dancer.
Well, he took those pictures that he shared with me. He took them.
No. They were taken of him.
Oh.
They were taken of him. You're talking about the one that he's a surfboard, and his wife is literally riding him like a surfboard in midair.
Oh, okay.
Yes. No,
he said
photo he shoots with these photographers.
No,
he didn't do that photography. They have a dance company, Amy Marshall Dance Company. So it's amymarshall.com. They came out of Paul Taylor out of New York, and they've had an incredible dance company for 9 years now. I am so incredibly proud of my daughter-in-law, who is one of the most impressive choreographers I've ever seen. And my son runs the company, is also one of the dancers, but he's executive director as well. So he's just as
I don't know how. They
do some interesting things, but I'm trying to think of. I can't think of a photographer down. It's terrible because he's one of the foremost. He's going to shoot me dead for not remembering this. Tells you the old age is getting into their senior moment. But they have photographers who ask them to do. In fact, they did a live photo shoot, which I got to watch online. as a large group of photographers were shooting them live, and we got to watch the video of it, you know, as a live stream. So that was pretty interesting too. But they love to use Chad and Amy and their company and all their different dancers for photographs like that. And they're an incredible company. I am immensely proud of them.
What's so neat about your son, Sharon, is maybe he says, would you like to ever photograph these things with her? And I was like, wow. So I just started looking at them, and I was, they're all up in the air.
What kills them is how many times they have to do that to get to that point. It's, you know, they were as incredible shape as both of them are. They said they were both unbelievably sore after that shoot.
I can imagine. They have every kind of movement that it just blew my mind. The thing that also was so neat that he said, oh, well, you'll get to use her equipment and, you know, and just make a day of it. But, you know, of course, charged, but to be able to do something like that is like a dream.
They're a wonderful inspiration to me as well. You know, I've actually made some jewelry for some of their pieces when they were performing. And my daughter-in-law, you know, I have one son, so my daughter-in-law is, in fact, she is actually a model on my website on a couple of, you can't tell which ones, but a couple of the photographs are my photographs of my daughter-in-law. Because she made a wonderful model. And now my granddaughter got her first necklace from me.
Oh,
because she was taking all of her mother's necklaces and putting them on herself. So as soon as she said grandma for the first time on Monday, I swore that I would give every piece of jewelry I had to her.
That being asleep.
You know? Okay, Pasha, they are yours now.
You know?
Oh. So, yeah. What did you make her? I made her, you know, it's funny because my son goes, oh, don't worry about it. You can make her something, you know, not, you know, something plastic. I said, are you kidding me? So I made her first necklace was pink Peruvian opal, moonstone, amethyst, and I'm trying to think there was one other stone in there. I can't remember. Oh, it was the blue Peruvian opal as well. So that was her first necklace, and with a sterling silver clasp, and she wore it religiously, so...
Does she wear it just perfectly well?
And she's not even two, but she loves her jewelry, and she loves her shoes. I'm going, God, Carrie Bradshaw in training.
Isn't that
pretty funny?
Something.
So she's my next model, is using my granddaughter.
You take your own photography as well, don't you?
I'm sorry?
You shoot your own photography at the
Yes. Yes, I'm working through that, too. I wish I was better at lighting, but... trying to work through the photography as well. I've got some great models and been very lucky and blessed with some wonderful people.
If you could choose any stone and any color besides the bloodstone, and you could make a peace stone for peace for the world, how would you, I just want to see how you would get that. If you could think of the world and the universe and what's going on and transpiring in the universe, and you were going to make it just to make it, not for any particular person, but for Mother Earth.
Wow.
What would you use?
You're limiting me to one stone?
No, many stones.
How can you limit me to one stone? Don't do that.
The one stone that will stick out mainly. You know, that would be perfect for a bloodstone because that's what our earth is doing. But what would you choose?
I tell you something interesting. I think if the money was no object,
right? Money's no
object. With anything, believe it or not, I'd work with diamonds. And I'll tell you why. Because if you think in the terms of light, the light spectrum, the combination of all color equals white. When you combine, people think it's black. Black is actually the absence of all colors in the light spectrum. White is the combination of all colors.
Right. Not many people know that either.
So I think diamonds and crystal, because it, to me it's absolute purity and unification.
So Lois Greenfield.
I'm sorry?
Lois Greenfield.
Oh, yes. You found her name. Thank you very much.
I just wanted to tell you that.
She's the one that does the Breaking Bounds calendar and books. She is the most, the foremost photographer of dance in the country, if not the world. And she's just an incredible talent.
Well, I tell you, your family is just full of talent. And with, I didn't want to take away from what you were making for the world, but she, it's just like she, your son, you, your father, your mother, the people that you make these things for, they, it's just such a wonderful statement. It gives such a feeling. Because to me, I started collecting stones when I was 4 years old. Because they spoke to me. I could feel them. And I saw little things inside of them, little pictures, you know, the way that the
especially with jaspers
lines.
Especially with agates and jaspers that you have, literally, you can have pictures that form, you know, from the different matrix and the different combinations.
And I told my daughter-in-law the other night, it was real late, because they had just gotten back from a wedding, and I said, hold this thing. What do you see in this thing? She goes, you know, like that. And I said, can we do this another night? And I said, well, sure. I said, but just to let her know and everybody else know that already knows that my stones come from when people ask what I want as a gift from a country when they come back, I tell them a stone. Or when I
you know about the stone in Israel called the Eilat stone?
What is it?
Eilat, E-L-A-T. It's from Eilat, Israel. And it's, you know, well, it's hard to find now. It's hard to find, unfortunately. But it's interesting because they're, you know, think in terms of like ametrine, where you have one stone that directly comes where two other stones have come together. That's where amethyst and citrine have come together and made a new stone.
Oh my God.
Okay. That's an ametrine. Well, a lot stone, and I please, people out there, do not give me a hard time because I'm probably going to get this wrong. But I don't know whether it's chrysocolla or chrysoprase. I think it's chrysocolla, lapis, copper, and one other stone that come together, and they all form in this place in Israel. And it's like these blues and greens and a little bit of copper, just like lapis has pyrite in it sometimes.
Right, lapis is supposed to be really strong for intuition and gift.
Well, but you see pyrite, which is fool's gold, that has that matrix through it sometimes. In fact, I put pyrite in with the lapis. But anyway, the Eilat stone is, if you can find it, is just gorgeous.
Well, my aunt is a prophet conference preacher in Israel and all over, so I'll just have, she's in Jamaica right now, but when she gets back to Israel, I'll have her look that up.
Well, and she's going to, and not just in Jamaica, but down in that area, there's another stone that's gaining popularity called Larimar.
And Larimar.
It's a light blue, but it's such a pure, beautiful blue. There's certain things that you can only get certain places. So they're not as prolific as certain stones, like black coral or Larimar or a lot of stones that are specifically one place in the world, and that's it.
The
so that's
light
kind
of
fun
blue.
To get those things.
Wow, Betsy. It's like you just orchestrated it all together. You know? And the intriguing in-depth detail is what is another thing that interests me. I like to take my stones and put them in a clear glass of salt water to get the energies off of them if they've been handled too much.
Mm-hmm.
But I know that you don't do that with your stones, but I'm just saying, you know, that the thing is that your energies are all over the stones and your feelings and your thoughts and your wishes and your dreams. You can imagine the beauty of that energy that transpires off of that person's energy mixed with yours and how it just must grow.
No, I appreciate you saying that because there is an element of me. I mean, just like in other artwork, you know, the pieces, nothing is arbitrary. You know, nothing is just put together. There is an inspiration to every piece that I do, every single one. And I constantly love the aspect that I am challenged at every piece.
So quickly, what's coming up for Bessie Conner?
Ah, don't know. You know, that's the fun part, as I said before, is to push myself harder and deeper and stronger into different areas and try to come up with things. You know, the magic statement to my ears is when someone says, I've never seen that before. And
I think we might have time for one or two calls, Bessie. We have talked to
Tony. Sure, sure, sure.
Let me give out a few call-in numbers real quick just to see if anybody wants to say hello from the past. Or just say hello.
Be nice, people.
Oh, yeah. The call-in number worldwide is 888-815-9756. Line 1 is 530-876-3222. And line 2 is 530-876-9916. Again, this is CBS Radio, Bright Lights Pathfinder Show, and tonight we have with us Bessie Conner. So please give her a call and just say hello or just whatever you
challenge
want.
Me.
Challenge them, yeah.
I love a good question and a good challenge.
Beth Diamond always has good questions, good challenges.
You know, that's a part of it, too, is to constantly, I think the sign of a good artist is not just what you produce, but the willingness to fail and make mistakes, learn from it, and push yourself on a continuous basis to be better, to be different, to
stay pop.
To go outside of your comfort zone.
That's what I'm looking for, popping. You know, the popping of it, you know, just mm-hmm.
You know, it's interesting.
Popping.
It's interesting, Kathy. In all my years of working in art, and you know, from my first art class was at the Mint Museum when I was 8 years old. So I mean, that's I started at a very young age. It wasn't until a year ago that I could call myself an artist. Would not call myself that, and
really?
That's kind of a nice place in my life. You know, that I have finally gotten to the point.
The niche.
No, but I mean, I feel as if I finally got to that point where I earned that phrase, and it took a lot for me to get to that point.
Well, I'm going to tell you what, you have got my heart with your
thank
with
you
your
so much.
And with your work.
You're
your
very
family,
kind.
Each person in your family, Ted, and your daughter-in-law, and your mother,
well,
and father.
He is my biggest
and
sister.
I can't forget Kathy that got lost in the ravines with me. You know, you've just got a wonderful family.
I do. I am truly rich and blessed with a wonderful family and incredible friends. I have been really blessed with, you know, a wealth and depth of friends in my life.
I want to ask you before, I know I can ask you this after we're off the air, but Arthur Goodman Park, that is something that has been a monument place for me and my family. And my children learn so much, you know,
my grandfather
and stuff. That is who to you?
That is my grandfather, and actually his son, Arthur Goodman Jr., was honored tonight. He passed away 7 years ago, and he was the one who took me to, Arthur Goodman Jr. was the one who took me to gem shows. He did lapidary. He did polishing. That was one of his hobbies. So he was one of my inspirations. As far as getting into the gemstones and the great love that I have for stones and gemstones.
Oh, exactly. It's just interesting how the small the world is, you know.
Oh, yeah. I tell people in the area, you got to be careful. I'm related to everybody here.
That place, the Goodman Park, is, you know, in Matthews, North Carolina, right outside of Charlotte. But it's probably Charlotte Annex now. But it has touched so many children's lives and so many people's lives. Your family just continuously has just such a heart.
Thank you so much.
Pure love and and giving and peace and harmony, and just you fill the world with color, Betsy, and you make this place a better place to live.
Thank you so much. Thank
and
you
I
so
just
much.
Want to thank that, you
that
so
is
much.
Very Betsy. Kind of you.
Oh, comes from my heart, girl. With that, we have a few minutes left. I want to know what you would like to give out to the universe in an energy ball.
Wow.
Any thought, any feeling, anything that you can think of.
Find your heart.
Find,
I think everybody has an element of creativity in them, and people don't listen to it. But I think everybody has been given a gift of creativity, and it takes different forms, and you have to find your voice, whatever it is, and follow it.
That's what I always say, listen with your heart and not your mind.
Mm-hmm.
Because the mind is man-made of the people, places, and things along the way. They balance those two together. Betsy, your wisdom, your it's been an honor to...
It's been an honor to be on this show. I appreciate it.
Oh, I hope you come back.
I would love to.
Didn't get a chance to get the call-ins because there's so much that I want to learn and know about, your work. And Betsy, you will be at what galleries for a while?
I'll be at Red Sky Gallery in Charlotte, North Carolina until I believe it's July 11th. I'll be in La Jolla, California at the La Jolla Arts Festival, which is a wonderful, wonderful festival, June 20th and 21st. I'll be in, on my website is a list of places that I'll be at, and I'll be at the Bloomingdale's Bethesda White Flint Mall in August and maybe another one in the fall. And there's some other things that aren't solidified yet, so they're not on the website, but they will be soon.
Mm-hmm.
Some other shows coming up.
You have www.BetsyKlein.com,
KLEIN.com. Right.
And with that, Betsy, I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart. Many wishes and prosperity to you. And thank you all at DBS Radio. We are off the air.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.